Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Jim Asker on the Billboard Chart Beat podcast. I'm the manager of Billboard's country, Christian, bluegrass, and gospel charts. Not Americana yet, Jed.
Okay.
Although I hope to trade for that soon.
Awesome.
Anyway, we are here today with my guests, and I'm really happy to have them here. Dave Cobb. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks, man.
Producer extraordinaire. And Jed Hilly, who is executive director of the Americana Music Association.
It's great to be here.
Welcome, everyone. I just want to run through a sampling of the artists that Dave has produced for our listeners. Chris Stapleton, Sturgill Simpson, Jason Isbell, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Shooter Jennings, Holly Williams, Jamie Johnson, Lake Street Dive. I love them, by the way.
Oh, great.
This past year, you released your own Southern Family album. It's a tremendous album. I want to talk about with just a song I was listening to about three times yesterday, Brandi Clark, John Paul White, Rich Robinson from the Black Crowes, and many more. 2015 was the year for Chris Stapleton, the Traveler album. I just looked at Nielsen yesterday. It sold 1.4 million units now. Congratulations.
Thank you. Awesome.
And it's garnered so many awards, including Album of the Year from both the CMA, the Country Music Association, the Academy of Country Music, the Grammys. So, Dave, first things first.
And nominated also in the Americana Academy.
Excellent. And we'll talk about your conference coming up, too. But I want to ask you, first of all, this is something, you know, I had 3,000 record albums by the time I was 17 years old. If you've ever seen the movie Hi-Fi, that was us in our neighborhood.
Nice.
And we never knew what a producer did. We would look at...
I still don't.
...the back, Phil Spector, and all the great producers that we loved. George Martin, of course.
Yeah.
But we never really knew what exactly your producer does. And to tell you the truth, a lot of our readers probably aren't users or listeners, and I'm not still clear. So first things first, can you give us a snapshot of a producer's
role? I think
a
producer is like a director of a film. It's very much the same. You know, you have for a film, you have a writer, then you have the actors, and you have the setting behind it, but it's the director that really kind of ties it all together. So I think it's like a director of a film in a lot of ways. You know, sometimes I wind up... You know, the artist comes in with a song, and we just arrange it together. Sometimes we help write the song. Sometimes we're, you know, spiritual advisor. I mean, it changes every time.
And it probably changes from act to act, depending on...
Absolutely. It's never the same.
Your role. Well, what kind of music did you listen to growing up? As a kid in Georgia, correct?
Yeah. My grandmother's a Pentecostal minister, so I wasn't really allowed to listen to a lot. You know, my dad didn't have 50s rock and roll stuff, which I loved, Buddy Holly and Elvis and things like that. But primarily, hear hymnals in church, and I'd sneak out and buy Black Sabbath records and Ozzy records and, you know, anything but what I grew up on. So it was kind of like, of course. I mean, come on. Black Sabbath, I think, is probably the heaviest rock band of all time. So I had to hide that stuff. So I kind of grew up with a balance of, you know, the old way and then sneaking in, you know, devil music when I could. You know?
Excellent. Yeah. Jed, what kind of music did you listen to growing up?
Well, my family had a farm in Vermont, and so I actually, in my early upbringing, I went to fiddle contests and bluegrass contests. I think the first record I bought was Neil Young's Harvest.
One of my top 10 all-time favorite albums, period.
Great record. Yeah. And just, you know, that sort of late 60s, early 70s, you know, thing that was happening, and which was broad, But it, in many ways, you know, the band, it was the roots of Americana, which I, you know, kind of came around to. By the time
the band, Robbie Robertson's band.
Yeah. Was I, or okay. Levon Helm.
Yeah. And he's probably the greatest singer of all time,
I think so, too.
I wanted to ask Dave about this. You were born in 1974, correct?
Yeah, correct.
And that was right after the Woodstock generation.
Yeah.
And the music of the early 70s, I think, gets branded by a lot of people as that classic time period, the Allman Brothers, the Band, the Grateful Dead,
yeah.
Poco, on and on. A lot of that music would be considered Americana today, and it just seems like
I think you just named Harvest. That might be the quintessential Americana record of all time, right? Yeah.
And that common thread seems to run through your music, that soul. Am I correct? Or?
Yeah, I think the music I love has soul, whether it's soul music, rock and roll, country, you know, bluegrass. I'm always looking for kind of a soul in music, you know. It's not necessarily about hits. It's about things that just make you feel a certain way and affect you. They're, you know, the songs you listen to, it makes your hair stand up on your arms. That's what I'm always looking for in music, period.
The first album I bought was the Dave Clark 5, Glad All
yeah.
Over.
Yeah.
I could taste it as an 8-year-old, right?
Yeah.
What was the first album you bought?
Karma Chameleon, Culture Club.
Awesome.
And Come On Eileen, the 45s in the same day. Excellent. You can only buy them at the grocery store, and I think I had to sneak and buy it, you know?
And Jed, do you remember the first record you bought?
Harvest, I think, was the first album.
Yeah.
Although Cheech and Chong's Big Bamboo was the first album I was gifted for my 11th birthday.
That's a good one.
And the first single I bought, 45, was 8 Days a Week.
Wow.
Ooh, great song.
Favorite band of all time.
And I want to get to this later a little bit with both of you, but, you know, a record, especially when you're a kid, open it up, you read the liner notes for days, and I remember when I was a huge Springsteen fan, and we were waiting for the Born to Run record to come out. In the Northeast, he was already a big thing there, and we were waiting. I probably spent 2 weeks with that record. It was just larger than life. And
yeah.
I'm afraid now, you know, with streaming and consumption that, I mean, is there still that enchantment with young people with music? Can you still get that?
I think it kind of moved into the live arena, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I had a great experience. I set up my turntable a few years back after it had been boxed up for a long time. And my then 12-year-old daughter, and she loved the Civil Wars. And I played that first record for her. And she literally sat in between the two speakers and curled up on the floor, like into a fetal position. And it just reminded me, I think, of what you're
so
talking
nice.
About. You know, that experience of living with a record. I mean, that's how we lived. And I would like to see that. I'd like to see that rolled back. I think the biggest crime of streaming occurred when the Beatles were launched. And if I were running Apple, I think I would have insisted that they only allowed, at least for 6 months, each one of those records be listened to in sequence, out of respect for the producer, out of respect for the band, and out of respect for the art that is album. I mean, you make art,
yeah.
You make albums.
Well,
you don't
lucky.
Make singles. Forgive
right.
me.
Yeah,
if
no,
think
it's true.
Do.
It's true. I don't.
Are you guys both Beatles fans?
My favorite band of all time, by far.
Is it true that I heard the story? I've read a few bios on the Beatles that they were rejected so many times by different labels, but when they were finally signed to EMI, that every producer turned them down, and George Martin was actually the last one on the list.
George Martin was producing comedy records.
Right.
Yeah.
And he said yes.
Yeah.
And then he turns out to be the greatest producer.
Yeah. Of all time, arguably. Yeah.
It's a great lesson. It's a great lesson for kids, everyone, that, you know, you could be rejected over and over and over again. But
yeah. You absolutely.
Know. Do you guys remember, Dave, first, do you remember the first concert you went to?
Kenny Rogers, 4 times in a row.
Excellent. Like a 4-night stand?
No, every time Kenny Rogers came to town, my parents had to
in
go to
Savannah?
See Kenny, yeah, in Savannah, Georgia. Yeah, yeah. I think that's why I started listening to rock and roll.
Was that
what ran away from country because of 4 of those concerts in a row?
What period for Kenny Rogers?
Yeah, beat it out. I don't know, 78 maybe, 77, 78,
some great songs.
80, yeah, something like that. Yeah, no, he's got great songs.
And
I appreciate
vocalist.
It now. I appreciate it now. Incredible. Yeah. I do like his 60s hippie stuff he did, though, you know?
Yeah.
And how about you, Jed? Do you remember the first concert?
I think the first one I went to might have been Bonnie Raitt and Asleep at the Wheel.
Oh, that's a good start.
But that was in a hometown in Vermont. And but then it was It was the Black and Blue tour, I think, when I was a teenager, that I actually, at Nassau Coliseum in Long Island, that my parents actually let me walk into the arena without them, and me and my buddy Dave went to that.
I saw many shows at Nassau Coliseum.
Yeah.
I grew up upstate, but there's so many great shows at Nassau Coliseum.
Yeah.
And it was a great time that I grew up in a town upstate New York where we could actually, as teenagers, walk downtown to the hockey arena. That's the first time I saw Faces. Wow. We were in school.
Yeah, lucky you.
Like 15-year-olds, and we were, you know, our parents let us do what we wanted to do.
Where was that?
I grew up near Syracuse, so we would be able to walk down to the auditorium and see Humble Pie or the Faces or the Grateful Dead or whoever was rolling through town.
That's cool.
You know, and it was just so accessible.
I see the sunrise creeping in.
Could we jump ahead a little bit? I want to jump ahead to that moment on November 4th at the Country Music Awards.
Right.
And I just would like to say, Dave, that I was in the auditorium that night, and that moment with Chris Stapleton and Justin Timberlake, it was like all the people that I was near, that business music industry right. types, were all talking and talking, and then that happened, and everybody stopped what they were doing. And it just seemed like one of those moments that I haven't felt in a long time, that you just witnessed something special just really happened. What was that like being on stage that night?
Sorry, the Chris Stapleton, Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, Chris and I were just surprised that we were asked to get to play the show, and so we were really humbled and honored to be there. And just thought, you know, this is going to be an amazing day. We get to go play, and then we'll leave, and we've done that, you know. But I think, you know, as we started to play the song, I remember looking out, and I was looking at the other country artists that were on the front couple rows, and I was watching their face, and their face, they had this, they were all glowing, and it not because it was, you know, the performance. It was glowing because of the support for Chris. They were all there for him, and he'd been friends with these people in the audience for a while. He'd written songs with some of the other artists, and they were just so happy for him. And you could feel the energy on stage because everybody was so proud and supportive of him. And it was just an amazing feeling, you know. I just remember looking over, you know, at Justin and Chris, and they had this beaming smile. I don't know. The whole thing was just this big light of energy from everybody. I sound like a hippie. I lived in California for too long.
Well, I just want to say congratulations on producing that record.
Well, he co-produced it with me, and it's an honor.
Yeah, and are there any plans for a new Chris Stapleton record now?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to make one.
Anything you
can... That's about where I have to leave it.
Can you share if you're going to produce it?
Yes.
Oh, very good. All right. Because I wanted to ask what was next for Chris. And when you recorded that, did you have any idea of how big of a record
No,
that
man.
Was
we
be?
Just went in there and we wanted to make a record that we enjoyed. You know, we thought that maybe it'd sell 20, 30,000 records and that would be the end of it. And maybe get to sell enough to make another one, you know. So, but we had a blast making that album. I mean, it really defied everything you're supposed to do when you make an album. I mean, we walked in the studio, great studio, RCA Studio A, historic one here in Nashville. We had an incredible engineer, this guy Vance Powell, and we walk in the studio, and the first thing we did is, you know, order lunch, hang out, goof off, drink a little bit, tell jokes, order dinner, tell jokes, look at guitars, go guitar shopping. And we didn't start recording until 8 or 9 o'clock at night. It was like it's if you were 15 playing hooky. And we'd start recording, and we'd get 2 or 3 master takes every day. And they'd be finished. They're just like the record. We had an incredible engineer, so when you listen back to the playback, it is the album. And a lot of the mixes on the album are just those tracking mixes at the end of the day. So it was just one of those things. Everything felt too good to be true on the whole record. Just an absolute pleasure to make that album.
Hmm. But you must have realized something special was happening when you were recording.
I mean, the music felt special, absolutely. Yeah. But you never know about the business side, what's going to happen with an album after it's made, you know?
Was Chris surprised that night when he won all the awards?
Yeah. I know for a fact that none of us thought anything was going to happen that night. You know, it's just too out of the realm of possibility. So,
aside from being tremendous, I haven't met him, but he seems like he's just this
he's
warm,
a genuine,
nice
incredible
guy.
Human being. He is. He really is an incredible guy.
He just seems so humble when he accepts awards. And
well, I think he's shocked by it every time. You know, it's kind of getting to live a lot of his fantasies. You know,
I got to see him at the Ryman.
I was there. Yeah,
you were on stage. Yeah. Exactly, because somebody pointed you out. That's Steve Cobb, and But it felt like I was watching the Allman Brothers in 1972.
Really?
Yeah. It just wow. I said that to the person next to me. I said it. I feel like I'm back in time. It just had that sense of. Has that album changed the direction of music at all? Because we saw it as almost a line.
I can't speak for that. You know, I don't know.
Jed, what do you think? Because we saw it as kind of a line in the sand. Like the music's going to go back to being more organic again. I'm talking about the country chart.
Yeah, I don't know that the country business. I think it's been a combination of. I think that was a turning point. I don't know that it was a line in the sand. I think the work Dave's been doing, the artists you mentioned, he's produced. I think the rise and success, honestly, of Mumford, of the Civil Wars, the Lumineers. I think the work that T-Bone and Buddy Miller did for the Nashville TV show, you know, where most of those songs, you know, the core songs and those first years of that show, you know, were more Americana driven than they were commercially driven.
Okay.
I think the jury's still out on whether it was a line in the sand. I think it definitely may have helped to spawn something new in the future.
Good. Because I want to ask you both. What do you think of country radio today? Jed, you go first. Among label execs, we've heard that it used to be more Americana, singer-songwriter driven. I happen to know that because I programmed radio stations a long time. But now, in many ways, it's a pop format. And is that good or bad? Jed, you first.
Well, I think there's a difference. You know, the work that I represent, and I think by and large that Dave produces, it is fine art. And I think there's a difference between fine art and commercial art, and that's neither good nor bad. But it is a different perspective. I think when Chris went to Dave and said, you know, here are my songs, they were songs that Chris wrote to tell stories through music in the best way that he could, not to write a number one hit. Mm-hmm. And by and large, if you look at what's played on country radio today, they are written, they are selected to be because people believe that they will be hits. And I don't know that anybody would disagree with that. And I wouldn't say that that's bad. It's not what I can't even speak to country radio because I don't listen to it. It's not part of my world. But I do know the difference in the music. And by and large, the difference in the music is that those songs on commercial country radio are geared to sell, are geared to be number one hits for the commercial radio format, and that's very different from the world of artists that I work in. I can't say that's bad. I mean, people are making money. I think that's great.
Dave?
I would say now is the first time in my lifetime that I've seen a kind of a playing field where a Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon could exist. And I say that, and I bring that up because Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon, completely an art concept album, but, you know, you think about songs like Money. They were radio hits. You know, or Led Zeppelin, you know, I feel like we're in this place where albums can actually break through with a song off an album for radio. And I hope that happens with country radio. And I think it will, because I've met country radio programmers, and a lot of them are really amazing people, and they have
There's
really great musical
a lot
taste.
Of great programmers
yeah, there
out
are. There are.
Who
so,
have ridden through
yeah,
different times.
Totally.
And
I feel like they're excited. A buddy of mine, Michael Bryan, here in town, I feel like he's a risk taker. He played Chris Stapleton way before anything had happened with CMAs or whatever, and took a risk on it. You know, he was the first guy, and people looked at him like, you know, what's he doing that? But he did it. And so I feel like there are other people like him that are taking chances.
And Michael, for our listeners, works for iHeart Media, and he programs WSIX, one of the most popular country stations.
Yeah.
Really good guy, too. So can we talk about your Southern Family record for
a
minute? Because I found it fascinating that what led you to that was inspired by White Mansions, which is from 1970?
78.
Produced by Glyn Johns, who produced a lot of great rock and roll.
Written
records.
By an English guy, Paul Kennelly, one of my heroes, who moved to Nashville and wrote songs for Waylon and the Everly Brothers and Johnny Cash and Marty Stewart, Hillbilly Rock, one of my heroes.
And Glyn Johns just produced the latest Eric Clapton record.
I'm so happy. That's such a cool thing.
At 74 years old.
Yeah, because Eric Clapton was also on White Mansions as the guitar player. So, yeah.
So what led you to picking the artist that you used?
That was completely selfish. I mean, the people, I love their voices. I love Brandi Clark's voice. I loved Miranda Lambert. You know, I always thought she's an artist I've always thought made really honest records that were commercially successful, you know, so I was a big fan of hers. And, you know, I'm a big Black Crowes fan, so got rich from the Black Crowes, and the kind of list goes on and on of people I just adored. Obviously, I wanted to have people that I'm, you know, friends of mine like Chris Stapleton and Morgan Stapleton and and Jason Isbell, you know. So it was good. I just threw a bunch of people I love together.
Talking about great albums, that Jason Isbell album is fantastic from last year.
Oh, man, he's one of my favorite writers ever. I think I was telling you earlier, when he writes, it takes 2 or 3 years to digest what he actually meant in the lyrics. Sometimes when we're recording, you feel it, you know there's a magic to it, and then 2 or 3 years later, I go, man, that's what he meant. He has that power with a pen. He's otherworldly.
The map of my heart looks a lot like yours, from the one-way streets to the old detours to the dark dead ends with their missing.
Can I ask you about the Mary Chapin Carpenter record, The Things That We Are Made Of? I was just listening to it in the car.
Oh, very cool.
And this was the first time you produced her. I happen to know John Jennings, who she worked with. I worked in Virginia for a long time. Sad that he passed away.
So what she was heard about that, I think.
What was it like? I mean, you working with her after she had 30 years of recording.
I think she knew who she was. She came in the studio. She had a real firm grasp on who she wanted to be and who she was. So I think the album is her. It's her memoirs. It's her just spilling her soul out on record. So she wasn't aiming for anything. You know, I love it. I think the best records are made like that, when there's no agenda except for to document who they are at this point in their life. And I think that was that kind of album.
It was soft and intimate too.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny because I think there's an inclination in the studio a lot of times when somebody brings a song to start chopping arrangements, to start, you know.
I was going to ask you if you wanted to bring it up a notch.
You know, you don't need the extra verse, or maybe the bridge is too long, or we should write this or that. But with her, you know, there are songs that have four verses, which is unusual for me to let a record go with four verses. But you just don't want to stop hearing her speak. You know, it needed to be said. When she said it, it needed to be said. And every lyric was profound. And it, with the way she writes, it was impossible to edit. You know, so what you're hearing is her kind of flow of consciousness.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
On the album, really,
you know. Well, just getting back to the Southern Family record for a minute, I forgot to mention that it debuted at number 5 on our Billboard Country Albums chart and number 1 on the Americana Folk Albums chart. So congratulations.
Thank you.
On that. And before I got into Mary Chapin, I just wanted to say that just really enjoyable albums, both of those.
Oh, thank
albums
you.
As I talk about them, Dave, I read a Billboard interview that you like to make, and you said this a minute ago about, you said in an interview that you like the artist to make feel like he's 15 or she's 15 years old again.
Yeah.
I thought that was an awesome quote. What does that mean, basically?
Well, I think we all got, I mean, as far as the artists go, we all got into music because it was fun. It was never for commercial gain.
Mm-hmm.
If I you know, I would have picked another career path if I thought about money only. But, you know, we there's something about the first time When you're young and you're a musician, you go over to your friend's house and you bring your amplifier and load it into their garage and you plug it in and you have no idea what's going on and you jam. There's a feeling that's really hard to get back. Maybe it's likened to, I've never done cocaine, but maybe it's like doing cocaine for the first time. When you get that first high, it's hard to ever get back there. So I try to make it feel like that. I try to take the process out of it and make it more of a, you know, a friendly environment and creative environment that doesn't feel like they're walls or rules, you know?
And you probably make, just meeting you this morning, you probably make feel people feel really comfortable.
Oh, well, who knows? I think probably wine helps with that.
You're recently named, I want to mention this morning, that you're resident producer of the famed Nashville Studio A.
Very fortunate on that.
Can you tell, a lot of our listeners probably don't know what Studio A is. Can you just...
No, there's a studio here in Nashville, historic RCA Studio A, and it was built in 65, and... You know, they recorded Dolly Parton, Jolene, and I Will Always Love You in the same day there. They did Amos Moses, Jerry Reed. They did Waylon did a bunch of stuff there. Daddy Walk the Line was recorded there by Waylon Jennings. It's just, you walk in the place, and it's a humongous place. It was built at the time when the Nashville sound was huge, when, you know, they realized they want some Sinatra money, so they started adding strings on country music, you know. So they built it to the house, full choir, string section, full band, singer all in one room. It's just a really magical environment to create. And that's also where we did Chris Stapleton Traveler.
Oh, okay.
As well in that room, yeah.
That's awesome. So, speaking of classic acts, just a question. The Beatles, Johnny Cash, or Hank Williams Sr., if you had the chance
to
produce?
The Beatles.
You take the Beatles.
Yeah. I don't think I would do a good job, though. They're probably, you know... Yeah, I think Paul McCartney was also probably the secret producer of the Beatles, too. He'd probably teach me a bunch of stuff, you know?
Well, didn't John Lennon, when Phil Spector recorded them, he went in, there was some scene that happened with a gun or something, and Lennon wanted control of the tapes. And
Phil Spector with a gun?
I love that. I love those crazy stories about old rock and roll. Any dream acts that you would want to produce, or any projects upcoming that you want to discuss?
You know, it's funny. I get asked that a lot about dream acts to produce, and I think I get really excited about new artists. I get really excited about the person that nobody's heard of yet. I think there's something magical when you work with somebody and it's their first album, and you know, there's no agenda. Nobody's looking for the album. You can kind of do it under the radar. So I always get excited about that. I actually have an artist that I signed to Low Country Sound, my label with Elektra, and is my cousin Brent Cobb,
Who played on your Southern Family record.
He has a track on Southern Family, which is really weird to say you're excited about your cousin because it's nepotism, but not at all. I signed him because he's one of my favorite writers, period. And I think we've made a really beautiful album, and I can't wait for people to hear that.
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you. And Jet?
If I could add also, I had an experience about a month ago where Dave invited me over to the clubhouse, and I got there, and he was in the room... with Anderson East.
Anderson,
is that okay if I talk about that?
Right now. Yeah, I can't wait to get finished.
So I went into the control room looking through the glass, and there's Dave and Anderson and the band basically sitting around in a circle making records like they used to make records. Yeah. Everybody's in one room. They're recording. And I will tell you that 40 minutes, they were back and forth. They stopped. Anderson would ask you a question. You would ask Anderson a question. You made him go stand in the middle of the group at one point to listen to how the sonically things were happening. At one point, Anderson said, "I don't think we need a vocal on here." And you were like, "Let's try that." And there was just this incredible give and take between producer and artist that literally, I was with a friend, and I literally turned to her and I said, "This may be a momentous moment that you will remember."
That's great.
"And we will remember in 25 years. It was that extraordinary.
Wow.
And the song, I don't even know what the song is. I imagine it's going to be on the new album.
Yeah.
But it was absolutely unbelievable.
And he's one of the best singers.
What a...
Going, period, to me. I think he's maybe the modern-day Joe Cocker.
When is the album coming out?
It'll probably be out early next year. We're working on it now, so...
Jed, you lead all aspects of the Americana Music Association. I've got to ask you, since I asked Dave the producer question, you know, I work portably, so I work from coffee shops, and every barista has an album out. You know, they're all musicians and artists, and I get asked all the time, what exactly is Americana music? They'll ask me, and I'll be like, good question. So that's my first question to you.
Well, there's the sort of emotional answer to give you, and that is, if you can taste the dirt through your ears, that's
nice.
Americana.
That's a great answer.
Maybe I should just leave it at that. Well, you know, Merriam-Webster put it in the dictionary.
Congratulations on that. And I was going to say that.
Huge.
5 years ago. You know, I remember when I was a kid, you know, if you had a dictionary and the teachers would say, you know, you were taught to look up a word before you used it. So Merriam-Webster's was kind enough after they put the word in the dictionary to allow me to make T-shirts, which said, you know, Americana, and sort of, you know, that Americana, sort of, you know, bullet font. And then on the back, we just wrote, look it up, Merriam-Webster.
And wow. here it is. Here it is from Merriam-Webster. It's number 3, by the way. So your job this year is to get it moved up to number 2.
Well, Americana is a term that which is intrinsically American. What wasn't in the dictionary was a term for the musical.
Well, here it is, a genre of American music having roots in early folk and country music, according to Merriam-Webster.
I actually think that's already dated, because to Dave, I think it incorporates. I think it is broader. I think the dirt is broader. I think it incorporates blues. You know, you guys correctly on the Billboard chart have been including, you know, Nathaniel Ratliff. He's got this soul to him that's not alternative country. Bonnie Raitt is inspired by the blues. She's not Muddy Waters. Right. We accept that Muddy Waters is the blues. Bonnie Raitt is something different.
Bonnie Raitt's Bonnie Raitt.
How American is Americana music?
Well, I think it's what has come out of this southeastern, you know, region that has, you know, developed country music, gospel music, bluegrass. You know, these traditions grew from Appalachia to New Orleans by way of Nashville. But the truth about it is, the banjo, using bluegrass as a perfect example for this question, the banjo is an African instrument. It was brought over by slaves. Hmm. The fiddle is a European instrument. But what makes it beautiful and what is the great part of America is the melting pot. It actually took 7 or 9 different cultures to create this form of music that became American, but it's truly international if you think in the context of an African instrument and a Scottish instrument.
And there are plenty of artists on the chart who aren't American. James Bay, for one.
I always think Americana, I said this before, represents honesty. Because I feel like when people talk about making an Americana record, it's the one they're not worried about anybody's opinion. They're pouring their heart out on record, and I think that's a beautiful safe haven of a music format, you know?
I think it's great that you're spearheading a lot of this. And how exactly did the Americana Music Association get started? What is its role?
Well, my main goal is to sort of change the way the music industry looks at music.
Like, we just changed the name at Billboard from the Folk Albums Chart to the Americana Folk Albums Chart.
Oh, that's how you asked how it kind of started.
And you were, I must say congratulations, because you were campaigning for that for a long time. And has that affected anything?
I think everybody's thrilled that Billboard is on board. I think it's a landscape shift. I think the chart shows that Americana is a good record sells. And I think by including Americana into your charts, it's definitely a defining landscape shifting moment.
I programmed a radio station once that we called AAA, the format, Adult Album Alternative, and now does Americana have a role in radio?
I don't think Americana is a format, and I don't know that I believe in formats. I think that formats has not been healthy for the music industry on the whole. I think, at least me, you know, I love the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. I love Patty Griffin. I think John Doe in Bozeman, Montana, appreciates Chris Stapleton, but also may appreciate Miles Davis. And to me, that's what's important. It's what the music, how does music hit your soul, and what do you love? So I'm not really a fan of formats. Do I think Americana has a place at radio? I think it's everywhere. I mean, I was watching the NBA Finals, and there's a commercial by Dawes, you know, and it's like I'm hearing Americana on commercials all the time. It's actually, I would rather have it be everywhere than just in one vertical line on one particular station on the radio dial.
Hmm. Do people outside of Nashville know that term, Americana?
Oh, I think people outside of Nashville got it before Nashville did, because Nashville is so commercial country centric. Case in point, you know, Merriam-Webster, put the term in the dictionary. They're based in Springfield, Massachusetts. The Grammys introduced the first America Best.
Is that where they're based? Webster's in Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
I lived there. I never even knew that.
The Grammys introduced the Best Americana Album of the Year award in 2009, and they're based in Los Angeles. There's a lot of neon country in this that I think was swallowing Americana to some degree. So I do believe it's the exposure elsewhere that somebody once said, the prophet's never welcome in his own home.
Yeah. We're talking with Jed Hilley of the Americana Music Association and producer Dave Cobb. Just really appreciate you both being here. What's something recently that you heard that just knocked you out that you wouldn't have expected to? Something great you could tell the listeners that you heard.
I have to say, sitting in Dave Cobb's studio while he and Anderson East were making a new record was unbelievable, and I can't wait for that record
shucks.
To come out. No, true.
Dave?
It's just funny. I'm always digging for old records and trying to find new inspiration, and sometimes I find it when the artist walks in with a new song, and I would have to go with Jed on this one. Yeah. I can't wait for everybody to hear Anderson East. I think, he walks in and he opens his mouth, and it's awe-inspiring, so I'm going to go with
awesome.
That, too.
Makes me want to go buy the album.
It's not out yet. I want to hear the record finished. We haven't finished it yet.
Yeah, I know. You said it's not out yet. Well, how do you listen to music? Just for enjoyment now. I'm not talking about when you want to hear something back that you recorded.
It's very interesting. I'm going to say Apple Music is how I listen to music the most.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why, because no cars have CD players in them anymore. So usually it's definitely finding new albums. I'll get obsessed with a certain genre, or I'll start doing research for a record, and it's great. iTunes or something like that, it's endless amount. You can just keep digging and digging and digging.
Okay.
And also, secondly, I have my friend Paul Kennerly, who wrote White Mansions, and mm-hmm. he, to me, is my muse. And so I go over to his house, and he makes me these little mixtapes. And he turns me on to the rarest, soul recordings and rarest, turn-of-the-century mountain recordings. So that's the only two things I really listen to,
Jed, how about you? How do you consume music?
I consume music mostly by going out.
Live music, you're talking about.
Okay. I work kind of in peace and quiet and very focused. My favorite times to work are between 4 and 10 in the morning, in part at 4 because my kids are asleep. But I get up and I just, I do a lot of the, logistical work at home. And when I listen to music, it's quite often, I love listening to live music. There's nothing. It hits me in the soul. I listen to music in the car. People send me CDs, and I'll plug my.
Well, people
must
send you both stuff all the time, right? To listen to.
It's hard to keep up with the volume of CDs that come into the office, so that may be why I rely on going out.
So tell me, please, the album's not going away, is it?
I think it's actually back. Mm-hmm. I think it's back for the first time that I can remember since being a kid. I feel like when you make an authentic. True record and you kind of put blinders onto the rest of the world and you make a piece of art, I think people buy it, they support it, they'll buy the vinyl, they'll buy the custom color vinyl, they'll buy the stream of it, and they'll show up for the show. So I think the album is living now. I think it's a great alternative to everything else, and
I think it's so great.
Well,
kids are listening to vinyl again.
My theory about records is vinyl sounds great, there's no denying it. It's probably the best sounding medium, but I don't think it's the vinyl that people really want. I think it's the fact when you buy an old album, it was a lot of really talented people in one room together, humanly interacting without digital mediums, mm-hmm. without clicks, without rules, and RCAA, they had the Nashville A team here in Nashville. They had Motown had its own band of incredible players. Capitol Studios, everybody had their own version. The Wrecking Crew in California. These incredible musicians, incredible writers, incredible singers. You had to be, in a certain skill level to make an album. They made these records humanly. They're interacting. There's mistakes. There's a raw feel. I think that's why people like vinyl, because most records are old records and they're digging for that feel. Mm-hmm. And now people are making great, great new records that have kind of capture that, but I think that's what people really like is the human interaction.
I think that's
missing.
An awesome note to end things on. Yeah. And I just want to tell you both, it was a real treat to have you here.
Yeah.
Congratulations to both of you
on
your success. This is Jim Asker of Billboard with Dave Cobb. and Jed Hilly, and thank you for listening.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for everything.
It was awesome.
I was learning to be a man.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.